Welcome to Ringside with Eric Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Colorado Avalanche beat writer over at ColoradoHockeyNow.com, podcaster here at Mile High Sports, bringing you another episode of the show. And in the middle of this homestand, and in the middle of homestands in general, like, it's crazy how fast the days go by, and it's kind of crazy how a couple of matinee games just kind of throw everything off, like the entire routine in terms of no morning skate, no writing late in the evening, having the games in the middle of the day, preparing for the next day's practice, knowing that that practice is going to be kind of coached like a morning skate. It's kind of thrown everything out of whack, and the entire purpose of those last 20 seconds of me rambling on was to make an excuse for the fact that I have not done a podcast since the New York Rangers game, so I am very sorry about that. We've got three games to go over, and we are not obviously going to sit here and break down games 46, 47, and 48 of the regular season, but we are going to touch on a few things over the three as a whole. Last time I did the show, it was the day after the Avalanche played the New York Rangers in a game where Jared Bednar came out and said that there were too many passengers, despite the Avalanche winning 3-2 in overtime. Too many passengers, too many guys that were kind of unable to be relied upon, one of them being Casey Mittelstadt at the time. Jared made comments about how there are 7 or 8 or 9 guys that he's got to trot out there for everything. We covered that on the last episode, but since then we've seen kind of a tale of three entirely different games that I'm still struggling to wrap my head around. And in fact, the fact that I haven't done an episode since that Rangers game, and I can kind of lump all three of these together without having come in here every other day since then, makes it a little bit easier, or sorry, makes it a little bit tougher and more fascinating to think of what the Avalanche have gone through since that Rangers game. Because it started with the Edmonton Oilers. It started with a game where the Avalanche came out like gangbusters and their offense was going and they're scoring goals and they're imposing their will and they're out to a 3-0 lead against a very good team in the Edmonton Oilers. Only for that to get completely pissed away and they lose 4-3 in overtime. Or sorry, in regulation, not in overtime. It was kind of mind-boggling. It was a little crazy that they let that happen and let it happen in regulation. And it wasn't even a thing where the Oilers had to fight back late. They tied it up 3-3 by the end of the second period in a game where the Avalanche led 3-0 more than halfway through the first period. So it's an unfortunate, just an unfortunate way for the game to get away from them. But it was followed up 2 days later, more like a day and a half later, with a matinee game against the Dallas Stars where the Avalanche absolutely dominated. Scott Wedgwood was in goal for the Avs. Casey DeSmith was in goal for the Dallas Stars. But other than that, the two teams both had come in rested, and the Avalanche beat them 6-3. 6-3 sounds a lot closer than it should be, in a sense, but it wasn't even remotely close. It was 5-1 for the Avs before Jason Robertson scored a couple of goals late in that game to make it 5-3. But then the Avalanche obviously made it 6-3 and won the thing. But it was just unreal to see the differences in how the team played. This was something that I wrote about in my 10 observations following that game against the Dallas Stars, where the Colorado Avalanche went from, let me pull it out before I, here it is. By the time the second period was over against the Dallas Stars, the Avalanche already had 27 shots on goal. So looking back at the four games before that, they played in Minnesota. This is whatever, 5-6 games ago now. They played at Minnesota, the game that they won 6-1 back then. They had 27 shots. Then they went to Winnipeg and got shut out, 22 shots. Rangers, overtime, 26 shots. Edmonton, 4-3 loss, 25 shots. 27, 22, 26, 25. They had 27 against the Dallas Stars at the second intermission. Fast forward to tonight's game, or earlier today, I should say, Monday, January 20th. I usually start the show by saying when I'm recording. It is Monday, January 20th, so early evening right now after the afternoon game that the Avs played against the Minnesota Wild. 27 shots again. So over their last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games, 27, 22, 26, 25, 27 at the second intermission, 34, I believe, was the total, and then 27 against the Wild again. So their shot totals are down, but it was just a completely different game, and it was against a good Dallas Stars team. It was impressive to see them have that kind of game. And then they follow that one up quickly with a polar opposite of a game against the Minnesota Wild, where they lacked the energy, they lacked the offensive touch, they couldn't get anything going against the Minnesota Wild until late in the game when it was way too little too late. And they end up losing 3-1. It was a game where they had 4 shots at like the 28-minute mark of regulation. It was a game where they had 11 shots at the second intermission, getting outshot 21-11, but still managed to enter the third period tied 1-1. That's the part that is like the most frustrating. 22-11, I should say. The Avalanche had a terrible start. They had 2 power plays in the second period and did nothing with them. They also killed off 4 penalties between the first and the second. But they had 2 power plays in the second period and did nothing with them. They couldn't get the offense going. Mackenzie Blackwood stole 2 goals. Like, just unbelievable 10 Bell saves. David Juracek in front. Joel Eriksson-Ek in front as well. 2 incredible saves. Nothing's working. The lines aren't working. That second line, boy, that second line. If I did an episode after the Dallas game, it would have been all about that second line with Mittelstadt, Lekkonen, and Drouin. Nothing. They couldn't get anything going. And despite that, 22-11 of shots, Marc-Andre Fleury's playing well, Blackwood's playing well, Minnesota's controlling, your power play sucks. Nathan MacKinnon does Nathan MacKinnon things for like 12 seconds, and it leads to a goal. Unfortunately, he didn't have a lot of those flashes tonight, but when he did, he had that one chance, and he made something out of it. They enter the second intermission despite all of that, tied at 1-1. The game is within reach. 2 games before that, the Edmonton Oilers, they led 3-0. Edmonton tied it. You entered the third period tied at 3-3. Both of those games, you came out with a combined 0 points. Couldn't get them to overtime. Lost. Obviously, it cancels out against the New York Rangers. You had to score late to send it to overtime in the first place and win it there. But 5-game homestand, the worst of the 5 teams being the New York Rangers, which is a team that went to the Eastern Conference Final last year, and a team that entered the game 4-1-1 in their last 6 in the month of January before playing the Avalanche. And in these 4 games, going into the 5th game on Wednesday against the Winnipeg Jets, which is the toughest of the 5, in these 4 games, you've managed 1 regulation win, 1 overtime win, and 2 regulation losses. And the differentiation between the regulation win, the RW, and the overtime win, the ROW combination of regulation and overtime wins, those matter in the standings in the grand scheme of things. But it's not been a good road trip. Sorry, homestand. The Rangers game didn't go well and you won. The Oilers game started well and then you fell flat on your face. You lost. The Dallas game, you put it all together. And then you came out against the Minnesota Wild and lost everything that you put together. So not a great look for this team. That's not what you want to see. But you have 1 more game. You have a chance to right the ship. You have a chance to beat the number 1 seed and to get a 3-2 record out of this. To me, you needed at least to get a 4-1 record to really feel like you got the best of this. But right now, it's not just the results, it's the way you're playing, and that's a problem. The power play cannot get it figured out. The power play is stationary. I'm like baffled at the lack of movement on the power play. I'm baffled that you get McKinnon makes a zone entry, you get Rantanen set up, you get Drouin set up or Mittelstadt kind of in that bumper position. Makar's at the point, Rantanen's on one end. Lekkonen's, you know, in front of the goal, which is usually Nichushkin. Like, you have all of these different guys in different places, and then they're just there. They're just there as the puck moves around. Nathan McKinnon gets the puck. You know what he does when he gets it on the power play? Kind of dipsy doodles a little bit, moves back forth, you know, sends it back to Makar, stationary. Makar sends it to the other point to Rantanen, to the other half wall, stationary. And it's making it so predictable. These are one of, like, one of the most highly talented group of guys you can have on a power play, who over the last 4, 5, 6 years have been incredible on the power play. Obviously, there's been a lot of turnover in a sense. But you have McKinnon, you have Rantanen, you have Makar. 5 seasons now. This is season number 6 with those guys. And then fill in the rest, whether it's Landeskog, whether it's Nichushkin, whether it's Kadri, whether it's Drouin, Rodriguez, Lekkonen. There's been a lot of guys that they've put into those places. And they're talented enough to score. But whatever it is this season, there is not a lot of movement. It's become predictable. When power plays become predictable, you got to find a way to change. You're noticing the Avalanche, they've shifted a little bit in the way that they make their zone entry. It used to be McKinnon rushes it in like a running back. Now he almost starts the rush, gives it to Drouin at the blue line, plays give and go with Drouin, or gives it to Drouin, lets him bring it in when Drouin's on the top power play unit. There are different things they're doing, but when they set up in the zone, it's stationary. They're not moving around. Something is off there, and I'm not sure what it is. But this is a game where you needed that power play to figure it out. This is a game where you needed them to be able to say, we're going to get a goal for this team today, because at 5-on-5, it's not working. Against the Dallas Stars, you only scored at 5-on-5, I believe. Like, you were rocking it. Actually, that's a lie. You also had a power play goal. But you were playing well at 5-on-5. In this game, you get the one goal. You can't generate much. But you get two power plays and do absolutely nothing with it, to the point, and I wrote about this today, where it felt like the momentum you had going into the power play, not only did you not keep it, but you lost it and you went backwards. You gave the momentum to the other team. That's not good. So there's a lot of things wrong right now. But I do want to get a little bit into that second line, because this has been a little bit of a bewildering thing to kind of watch unfold. Understandably so, a lot of the things that I wrote following the Dallas game on Saturday was about the second power play, the second line, not power play. It was about the fact that Casey Mittelstadt, who struggled pretty much since October, you can't even call it a slump anymore when it's 80% of your season. Pretty much since October, Mittelstadt struggled. And he comes out against the Dallas Stars, scores the opening goal, adds a couple of nice assists, looks good, 13 minutes and 58 seconds. Not a lot of ice time, but Mittelstadt doesn't play a lot of PK time. He doesn't play a lot of PP time because he's on the second unit nowadays with Lekkonen and Drouin ahead of him. And obviously Makar, McKinnon, and Rantanen is the other three on the power play. So not a lot of ice time except for even strength, but he plays a lot of even strength, and he does it with Arturi Lekkonen and he does it with Jonathan Drouin. These are the two guys that the Avalanche put together late last season, and they started to develop some chemistry. And then in game number 82, Jonathan Drouin gets hurt, exits the lineup. Obviously, you had Nichushkin, McKinnon, and Rantanen on the top line, and that's kind of what you want to have this year going into the postseason. But then what that did was it made you have to bring up Zach Parise from the third line, and Parise was playing with Mittelstadt and Lekkonen, and it was kind of like everything changed. Granted, they still got through Winnipeg, and then when they got Drouin back, Nichushkin, let's not go back down that road. But they put that line back together, and it worked. They looked spectacular, and it looked like the type of game that you can build off of, only for not only them, but everybody to come out and put up the performance that they had on Monday. Disappointing, to say the least. You were hoping, kind of like praying, a little bit of a hope and a prayer that you would have Val Nichushkin back, and that didn't happen. Nichushkin ends up not playing again. He ends up practicing on Sunday, and I was there, and he skated on the fourth line with Ivan and Parsonen. But you don't get Nichushkin back. You put that top line together with Ross Colton again. You bring Yuri and Ala back up to play on the fourth line to cover for where Nichushkin practiced on Sunday. You keep the second line together and nothing works. Nothing. Now after the game, Ivan and Inala were both sent down because you're going to do the same thing again. So the Avalanche are not practicing Tuesday, but they will have a morning skate on Wednesday because they will be playing in the evening that day, not a matinee game. Granted, by the way, these last two games started a stretch of 5 out of 8 matinee games. I've never seen anything like that. Like, over the weekend, you have a couple of 11 a.m.ers, Saturday and Sunday. And then next week, or the week following that, on Sunday, February 2nd, the last home game heading into the Four Nations break, you have the Philadelphia Flyers at Ball Arena at 1 p.m. So you're hoping to get Nichushkin back for Winnipeg. You're hoping you only need to call up one person from the AHL. None of the call-ups are working. That includes Ivan, who early in the season did work, but I think he's got 1 point in his last like 30 games or some crazy outrageous number after starting the season so well. And then you look at today, the difference between Inala and Ivan wasn't a lot in terms of ice time. Ivan played 309, Inala played 412. So it was an extra minute and 9 seconds. But the big difference that I saw, and Parsonen was at 550, so he was ahead of him too. God, just a completely useless fourth line. It's last season all over again. You better hope at the deadline you get your bodies back. You get Nichushkin. You get hopefully Landeskog or Wood or one or both of them. And you have guys to use. But the difference between Inala and Ivan was Inala had 7 shifts. Ivan had 5. So it's not that Inala played a minute and 12 seconds longer. And, you know, maybe you can think and point to an example of a time where he was pinned in the offensive, in the defensive zone, and couldn't get off the ice and had a lengthy shift longer than his line mate. That wasn't the case. Inala jumped over the boards 7 times, Ivan 5 times. Both unbearingly low numbers. Just insanely low numbers. However, it's sounding like Bednar liked Yuri Inala more than he liked Ivan. So who are you going to call up? Who's going to play? If Nichushkin's back, who's going to be the other one? Is it going to be Inala? Is it going to be Ivan? Or are you going to do what you've been doing all season and just pick a damn name out of a hat and hope to God it works? Because right now, whatever you're doing is not working. Your call-ups are not working. This team misses Miles Wood like it's nobody's business, and it's crazy to say that because Miles Wood wasn't having a good season this year. There was a lot of reasons why the Avalanche were losing games, and a lot of it was because of goaltending, and there were some defensive lapses. Devon Taves was trying to figure out how to play with this injury and not being at 100%, and you had, you know, a lot of things to figure out with your third pair. Is it Shillington? Is it Dahan? Malinsky? Like, you didn't know what you were doing there for a little bit. But lost in all of that, Miles Wood did not have a good start to the season. But this is a guy that you need. This is a guy you miss now because playing him 8 or 9 or 10 minutes is going to be far more effective than Ivan at 3 or Inala at 4. And it'll give Parsonen and somebody else to play with so that Parsonen's not playing 5 minutes. Parsonen's a step above the AHL call-ups. He's a guy that should be playing 10, 11, 12 minutes per game, but he doesn't have the proper line mates to do that. So even if Val comes back, he got to call somebody up. And the whole point of this conversation at this part of it was to say, who is it going to be? Is it a guaranteed that Inala gets to, or that Ivan gets to call up, or could Yuri Inala be heading back? And if it's not any of them, then who is it? Because right now, I'm going to pull up their page to make sure that I still have the updated numbers, because I was looking at this a couple of days ago. But looking at the Colorado Eagles, let's pull up their stats page. Gosh, trying to navigate the AHL page is quite the task. But looking at their stats page, I remember Oscar Olausson, at the time that I had checked, was the guy that most recently was scoring and putting up points. He wasn't putting up a lot of them, but he looked kind of the best at the time. Problem is, whenever Olausson gets called up, he doesn't get the ice time. He doesn't look good. And he's sent back down before we have a chance to, you know, do the whole hope and a prayer thing that he's figured it out, because he hasn't. And even he, 7 goals, 6 assists, 13 points, just unusable players. So I'm really curious to see where Jared Bednar goes with this as he continues once again to navigate another season where the depth is an issue pretty much all year. The injuries are an issue. And when your top guys don't play, that's when you end up in a stretch like you don't play well. That's when you end up in a stretch like you have these last four games, where you're 2-2 in a stretch of games where you needed to put the foot down and impose your will and leave your mark on the Western Conference. You had 3 teams in the division. You're 1-1, and you got Winnipeg coming to town. Winnipeg, by the way, losing to Utah at the time that I'm recording this. Let's see how that game shakes out. But then you also have the Edmonton Oilers, a top team in the other division that you really wanted to set an example of. You get that 3-0 lead against Stuart Skinner, and you mess it up. And the Oilers are on the second of a back-to-back, by the way. So tough look all around, tough stretch of games. Hopefully Nichushkin gets back, but I don't want to sit here and pretend like Nichushkin is the only and the biggest savior. Granted, he will fix a lot of things in terms of giving you Ross Colton on a line with Parsonen or whoever the fuck. If you're not going to break up Kelly, Kiviranta, and O'Connor, it would be like Ivan or Inala with Colton and Parsonen for now. But just having Colton and Parsonen together, just having Colton, Parsonen, Kelly, Kiviranta, and O'Connor now gives you 5 usable pieces in the bottom six. You're working towards 6 usable pieces, and you're working toward a better 6 than what you have now. Last thing I want to touch on, Josh Manson has had a rough few games. Jared Bednar has talked about how he's playing injured, and they're kind of like managing his ice time away from games and practices and morning skates and things like that to make sure that they can get him through these games to the Four Nations break for him to be able to rest and recover. But no excuse, as Jared Bednar said, he's just not looked great recently, and that in itself has become an issue that you hope you can fix. You need Josh Manson. You probably need another defenseman too, but you need Josh Manson to get things figured out. So with that, we're going to put an end to the show. I'll have another podcast for you on Tuesday about some other things on the off day. But I did want to get this one in here now as I prepare for that one, because the schedule is not slowing down for anyone until the Four Nations face off. But we will obviously continue to podcast and have these conversations during Four Nations, because we're going to follow MacKinnon, Makar. We're going to follow MacKinnon, Makar, Taves, Lehkonen, Rantanen, and all of those guys. And we're also going to follow what could be a very interesting and fascinating and unique type of break where you could see trades, you could see rumors and conversations happening between general managers that you would otherwise not see. So with that, follow me on Twitter at RunRightArif. ColoradoHockeyNow.com is where you'll find all my writing. Subscribe for the plus. Subscribe to CHN Plus to get the paid paywall content, or you can just sign up on the website to get an email and access to leaving comments. Other than that, if you made it this far in the show, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out you.